This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the Stage of History.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
What is up, everybody, and welcome to the 89th Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. 89 episodes. That, even by my crude math, is only 11 away from 100, which means we'll probably do something special, but don't hold me to that just in case we don't. In a change to regularly scheduled broadcasting, you may be confused by the difference of host. I'm Jazz. I'll be your host this evening, and I'm delighted to be joined at this virtual roundtable by three Dreamcast Junkyard heavyweights who need no introduction, but obviously I'm going to give them one anyway. First up today, in the absence of Andrew, I felt like we needed somebody to venomously defend Shenmue from the likes of me. We've got Lewis. Welcome to the show, Lewis.
Hello. Thank you for having me. I am good. I don't know if I'm a Dreamcast heavyweight, but I do currently have my finger on the pulse of Dreamcast everything.
Nice.
So I am ready to discuss the white Sega box.
Good stuff. Second up, the man who owns more regional variants of games in the Dreamcast collection than there are regions left in the EU. Welcome, Mike.
Good evening, James. Good evening.
You know, I'm going to keep going on about the region thing and your game collection until the day I die at this point.
No problem. Not a problem at all. If anyone has any regional versions I don't have, please get in touch. I'm happy to have the red-covered roadsters anytime anyone's got one to spare.
Mike Phelan, the only guy who cares about the red-coloured roadsters. And finally, I would say last but not least, but I always have to put Tom down in some way, it is the Daddy Dreamcast himself, fresh off his 50th birthday celebrations. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening. I'm actually 60, not 50, so you messed up there straight away. Also, just like Lewis, bit confused about the heavyweight thing. I would consider myself more like a paperweight.
Phantomweight, maybe. We have got a great show for you today. We're going to be covering some new Dreamcast games coming out. We're going to be covering some news around how we are consuming our Dreamcast games these days, and some translations from foreign languages into English of Dreamcast titles. Before we do that, though, I'm going to kick off by asking the panel a question based on a story that Tom has been reporting on recently. Those of you who are into your Sega game genres will be no doubt well up to speed with a game that was released recently on contemporary consoles called Taxi Chaos, which was, to put it mildly, a bit of a ripoff of Crazy Taxi. Heavily inspired, I think, is the official term to give it. So I thought I'd start off by finding out which Dreamcast series you think deserves a spiritual successor on modern consoles and why. And I'd like to start off by welcoming Tom back into the stage to kick us off.
Yeah, cool. The first thing I want to say is I really kind of learned about this game and how bad it is by Andrew's video that you put up on YouTube on the Cross Players website. So check that out if you can, because it looks horrendous, not the video, the game. So just to clarify that. Going back to the question, I think, does it have to be like an exclusive, or can it be a multi-platform, or?
Could be anything you want, Tom. We make up the rules as we go along on this show. You know that by now.
Yes, that sounds good. Yeah. Okay. So I've been thinking about this, and a game I would very much like to see remade with a modern twist would be Alone in the Dark 4.
Mm.
Just because I'm a big fan of like the sort of Lovecraftian side of horror, a big fan of survival horror, and I think that game is a good game as it stands, as it is on the Dreamcast. But I would love to see a modern twist, maybe in the vein of a Resident Evil game, you know, how they've been redoing them over the shoulder, kind of third person. I'd like to see that mansion and that world recreated in a, you know, third-person real-time engine. That'd be pretty cool, I think.
I'd buy that. Lewis, would you buy that?
Yeah, I think if you sort of like made it look all sort of, I don't know. I'm trying to think where like if the original's based in like any kind of like period of history.
I think it's kind of set in almost like a sort of 1930s kind of vibe to it. The thing with that would be that because you've got a torch and you need to like use the torch, it would be like almost like a crossover with like the Doom 3 kind of everything's dark and you'd have to like illuminate everything, but with a handheld torch and a pistol or a shotgun or something. I think that'd be amazing personally.
Did you say a 1930s vibe, Tom?
Yeah.
Interesting. Hold that thought for one moment. Mike, would you buy that game?
I would, yeah. I think we're missing the elephant in the room, though. Surely it'd be best as a VR game.
Ooh.
You know, having a torch in one hand, a pistol in the other hand with the actual controllers. Yeah, I think it's the same what Tom says, really. It's the game's underrated, let's say, for Dreamcast. And I think it's, although they have done, there's just one Alone in the Dark's come out since. I can't remember how many Alone in the Dark's have come out since. It's been a bit of a dead franchise, hasn't it, recently? But I think it'd be really good, a really good take on survival horror. I think survival horror has become all about Resident Evil for many people. And I think anything else to add to the genre. And Alone in the Dark is ultimately the big daddy of them all. So,
yeah. Nice. Three thumbs up for your selection, Tom.
Well done.
Lewis, what have you got for us?
Okay, mine's a bit boring. That is because the game that I would want to see a spiritual successor for is being made in the form of Bomb Rush Cyberpunk. Because, yeah, I'd want a new Jet Set Radio. I've wanted one ever since I played Jet Set Radio Future. In fact, I think probably prefer Jet Set Radio Future. So it was quite nice to see from the Bomb Rush. I keep wanting to say Bomb Rush. Bum Rush. Cyberpunk trailer that it does look very much like Jet Set Radio Future. And I think the reason I love the way it looks so much is because this sort of like spiritual successor thing I can be a bit skeptical about, because, you know, I mean, look at Taxi Chaos. It's like people wanted Crazy Taxi to be sort of refreshed, but Sega weren't going to do it. So this company made a pretty sort of they're going to improve it apparently, but at the moment as it stands it's a bit crap, and that's the thing I'm sort of worried about. You know, Mighty Number 9 and things like this, where it's like we want a new version of something we love, but it's never the original. But Bomb Rush Cyberpunk, to me, like if you told me that was the new Jet Set Radio and edited in Jet Set Radio something at the end, I would have not batted an eyelid, honestly. Like it looks like Sega made that game. So yeah, when I saw that new trailer they just released, I was like, yeah, like this is what I've been waiting for. And even as Hideki Naganuma scoring it, which is half of the Jet Set Radio thing anyway, you know, that's half of the fun. So yeah, that's the one I
I didn't realise he was involved. I didn't realise Naganuma was involved.
So yeah, so in the trailer, the music that the guy like selects is on his phone is, it actually says on the handset that he's, if you look closely, it actually says Hideki's name. So yeah, it's cool to see that they got him on board.
You know, it's really interesting because you mentioned that obviously with the taxi game, it doesn't, you know, it's not a very good game, which means it's easy to just kind of fob it off as that's rubbish. They're just copying, they're making it, you know, they're plagiarizing the work that's been done of Sega. But then when you've got a game like this one, which comes across and it actually looks like it could be quite good, I feel like the same people who talk about it in a negative light, all of a sudden are well up for it, because now all of a sudden they've kind of made a game that they actually want to play. So I wonder if that's the line between plagiarism and sort of spiritual successor, is whether the game's any good or not, or whether that's just my cynical take on people's feedback.
People saying that like Taxi Chaos is a bit of a rip-off, but you know, like you know, like when this Bomb Rush Cyberpunk comes out, everyone's, you know, sort of singing its praises. So it's kind of like there's almost like a bit of a line, like you say, like if it's bad, they're like, oh, it's a rip-off, screw it.
But what do they say though? The greatest form of what is it? The greatest form of,
you know, I just want to leave you hanging, mate. The greatest form of flattery.
Sincerest form of flattery.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I just to say, just to finish off up with that, is I feel like Jet Set Radio is a game that, because it relies quite a lot on sort of like the style and the music. Who remembers the story of Jet Set Radio? It's all about sort of the experience and like what you're doing in the game, the music, you know, the way it looks. Obviously, you've got like the characters, but like Beat and all these characters, they don't really have any kind of distinct personality. I suppose the only ones who have like a sort of notable personalities are like Professor K or the I think it's Onishimo, like chases yeah. you down, like he's sort of an angry dude. So like it is quite an easy game, I think, to do a spiritual successor of, because you're not like playing it and thinking, oh, I wish that character was in it, or I wish that, you know, as long as you've got some crazy DJ and an angry cop who chases you down and it looks cool, it's got good music, it's Jet Set Radio.
Good stuff. In a word, Tom, you buying it, yes or no?
I will buy it on Steam if it's appropriately priced.
In a word, Tom, yes or no, you buying
yes,
it?
Yes, yes, yes.
Mike, are you yes. buying all? How many variations are you buying, Mike?
Just the one, unless it's a red cover version.
Go on then, Mike, what have you got for us?
So I'm going to go for a little bit more of a fun game. Not fun, that's a bit of the wrong word, but... the game I'd like to see a spiritual successor to is something which I think is lacking in the modern day a little bit, which is a successor to Illbleed, one of the greatest concepts for any game on Dreamcast. Didn't quite work out in terms of the actual game. Wasn't quite as fun as it maybe should have been. But I think a really fun, tongue-in-cheek, ridiculously over-the-top, horror-loving game like this would work really well. I think everything is set up for it in the modern day. And I think it takes away a little bit from the seriousness of a lot of games at the current time. Games are coming a little bit too serious, in my opinion. And I think Illbleed would be a fantastic tonic for that.
I think almost games like Illbleed, and I've not played it a tremendous amount, but I know what you mean, that kind of that unique take on the genre. I think a lot of sort of AAA, at least game producers these days, kind of steer a bit clear away from these sort of more niche, not know how it's going to go down subgenres, because it's almost like game development is so expensive nowadays to what it used to be. They just can't take a risk on it, and they've got to kind of go for that next in the series of the really shocking and gory survival horror, because that's the kind of the one that sells. So I'm with you. I'd love to see more insight into games like this and just sort of do things a little bit differently, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think as well as the fact that a lot of modern games don't, they go on the idea that horror games have to be, it's going to sound a bit odd, but horror games have to be jump scares. That's not what classic horror is necessarily about. And I think a lot of games miss that aspect. And I think a modern version would work really well on any platform as well. And a VR version obviously would be fantastic. I mean, that would be the perfect platform, I suppose, for it. But yeah, just anything which is a bit more comical, a bit more lighthearted is what we need, really.
It's a really good point you made as well about jump scares and stuff. And you are right. It's kind of, jump scares have become synonymous with the genre. Whereas if you look back to Resident Evil, you had maybe two kind of the main jump scares in the entire game. I think it's more about that fear of kind of, you know, not having enough ammo and stuff more than anything that you should be trying to for.
I think that's a mirror of the film industry as well, though, isn't it? Horror as a whole has become a lot more about jump scares. And I think
certainly Western film has,
definitely. I think that's one of the big things as a horror fan myself. I always find a little bit disheartening, because you always know the films, it's such a basic template, and they get it wrong so many times. I think it's the same with survival horror on video games. You know, it's the template was laid out, they sort of followed it quite closely. And I think something like Illbleed is just so utterly insane in areas. It's fantastic.
Good stuff. Lewis, you buying it?
I think a game like that is, like Mike says, it's kind of missing. Even the fact that games these days are so polished, while Illbleed is not, which kind of fits in with its sort of B-movie theme. You know, so we just need some like indie studio to accidentally make a game like Illbleed that like controls a bit funny, and we'll be set, I think.
Tom, you buying it for a reasonably priced amount on Steam?
Possibly, yeah, it's in a Steam sale, yeah. But just going back to something that Mike said, you know, modern horror is all about jump scares. I was thinking about this the other day. I was thinking, what is one of the most horrific things I've ever seen in a film? And one of the things I think about is that scene in Pinocchio where the kids are all drinking and smoking like cigars and turning into donkeys.
Wow.
That is way more scary than somebody, a skeleton jumping out of a closet. Do you know what I mean?
So officially, Pinocchio is now a horror film. But
that's a deep cut. That's a deep cut for a Dreamcast podcast, Tom.
But do you know what I mean? It's just like weird body horror.
There's your cover art, Lewis, when you come to do the cover art for this episode. All right, well, my choice is not Spirit of Speed 1938, because I didn't want to be that predictable. My choice is one that I think I've mentioned before would make an excellent contemporary game, and that is Toy Commander. I think you could make such a good sequel to that nowadays without deviating too far away from the sort of the charming visuals that kind of made that game what it is, the sort of almost cartoony, but not cartoony, if you know what I mean, style graphics to it. And I think the overall premise of the game, where you kind of control toys around a house, is just something that doesn't really get done anymore, because we're always on this quest and relentless pursuit for realism in everything. And I think, I just think the concept is still sound today. I think it would make a really good smaller release, maybe on modern consoles.
So Toy Commander's Vi.
Yeah, I think so. Full online play, racing built in, track designers, be great. Think of all the DLC with all the different houses you could download as well. You could have famous people's houses. You could download like Kim Kardashian's mansion and play around that. In the interest of moving on, because we've been talking a long time about our intro question, because Tom refused to give us a one-word answer. The first topic we've got to discuss today is in last week, we had Josh Prod and Pixel Heart, who were teasing out a load of photos on Twitter with regards to what can only be described as a metric ton of sealed Dreamcast games. These are original games. They're not reproductions. These are the originals, new, old stock. Give you an idea of the sorts of titles that are included in these photos. We've got things like Metropolis Street Racer, Virtua Fighter 3, Legacy of Kain, Marvel versus Capcom, which I think is going to be the big standout here, Sega Rally, Toy Commander, I was going to say Sensible Soccer then, which would have been better than Sega Worldwide Soccer, but unfortunately it's the latter. Boxes and boxes and boxes of brand new stock, which they have said they are going to be releasing on a weekly cadence, one game per week. It kicked off last week with Metropolis Street Racer, and we'll go into how well it's been selling in a bit. But this kind of sparked quite a bit of discussion amongst the community, and I thought it'd be a good place to sort of start having a chat about what we think about it. Are we excited to be able to buy brand new Dreamcast games again? What do we think about the pricing? So Metropolis Street Racer has been priced at €25, so about £20 in British money. Yeah, I mean, who wants to kick us off? What do you think about all this? What is it, good? Is it bad? Are you indifferent about it? Are you going to be buying them?
I'll jump in first. I won't be buying them, but I think, yeah, if this is your thing, if you want to jump in and get some sealed games, by all means, crack on. Everyone's entitled to do what they want with their own money. It's an interesting one. It makes me wonder what else is still out there that's completely sealed, new, never been touched by human hands. Hats off to Josh Prod for doing this and seeing a gap in the market for sealed games. So I'm not the target demographic for this. I've played all of these games many times. I own most of them. I don't see the value in sealed games. It's not my thing. But for those people who do want to jump in, then, crack on.
Yeah, I agree with Tom. I think I'm not the target demographic either. I've never been a sealed games fan. Pricing-wise, I mean, it's an interesting one, because MSR has been available sealed online for below £20 for quite some time. And I think for us in the UK, it also becomes slightly more complicated because of potential extra costs from anywhere we buy stuff from at the current time. So I think that's also an issue with these sealed games.
Yeah.
But I think, as Tom said, if people want them, and there's lots and lots of people who want sealed games, this is a great avenue to get them from reputable sellers. And Josh Prod are definitely They've delivered on many, many games before, so we know that they will deliver on them. But I think we'll have to wait and see what games come next and see the exciting ones and the prices for those.
Yeah, because... just on that point, Mike, I know that James has already mentioned some of the games that are coming, so like things like Soul Reaver, Marvel vs. Capcom. That's great, and I'd love to see what else is coming. The one thing that I would actually just want to kind of mention on this podcast about the MSR is we don't actually know if it's the one that is the version that's got the bugs in it or the one that was the reissue, because they've both got the same serial number.
Yep.
So it could be it could literally be the one that was stopped from being sent out to people because it's got all these bugs in it, you know, so...
Just to pick up on something else you said as well, Tom, and I remember an episode, I don't know if you guys are familiar with Pat the NES Punk, who was talking about, talking about, you know, as you said, it's always fascinating when these things pop up, when people find like warehouses full of new old stock. And basically, I mean, the conversation he was having was around, you're only someone finding a box full of sealed stadium events on the NES for that the price of that game for collectors to go from like 70 grand down to, you know, a tenth of the cost.
Yeah.
And I think that's the interesting thing for me is that, you know, I think you look at Dreamcast, the Dreamcast secondhand market, and I include buying old new stuff as part of that, obviously, over the last 10 years. And as you alluded to, Mike, I mean, you used to be able to buy games like Virtua Fighter, Metropolis Street Racer on eBay for like 10, 12 quid sealed, with Stellars who had multiple dozens of copies in stock. I bought both of those games sealed myself from eBay in the last sort of 5 or 10 years. I think there's been a big shift because I'm someone who likes to buy sealed games. I like to have a brand new game, even if it's an old one. I'll be happy to pay a little bit extra to do that, especially with how fragile PAL Dreamcast cases are. And so it's something I always keep an eye on eBay. I always have a quick search for, you know, sealed Dreamcast games, and I always sort of filter it by price, lowest first. And it's gone from like the lowest price being like, you know, 5 quid for Choo Choo Rocket and various copies of Dream Key.
To can't like beat the, a Dream Key.
the cheapest you'll get now, like literally Dream Key copies go for like 15 quid sealed now. Choo Choo Rocket, 15 quid. But my point being is the market is changing because these copies are all being bought up. But now all of a sudden, we know there's all these extra copies that are about to go into the market, which in theory should bring down the price of both the sealed and non-sealed versions of these games on eBay. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out over the next sort of 6 months. And I think that possibly is why they're not releasing all these in one go into the market.
Can you imagine that a shipment of Project Justice, PAL, 20,000 copies sealed is suddenly available. It's like,
but you know, you can very well believe it with Dreamcast stock because of the way everything just kind of, you know, fizzled out on the console. There would have been pallets of unsold games somewhere. Oh, yeah. Most were probably destroyed. What about you, Lewis? Is this something that interests you at all?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of interested. Like, not all the games that were listed were like things I'd be that interested in, I suppose. But maybe if they're like a decent price, I'd consider it. I mean, it's a sort of debate I always have whenever I buy a game that's older, is how much extra do I pay for the sealed version? I mean, just yesterday, because I've been enjoying Resident Evil 2 Remake, I was like, I'll buy the third one and I'll play that next. So I was looking online, and it's like, it's this much for a sealed copy, that much for secondhand. I was like, you know what? It's not that much extra. I'll just get it sealed, get a nice new game. If it's something like that, if, say, like the price for a secondhand one is not that much lower than it is sealed, I'd consider that. One thing to just add, actually, was that they had some photos with non-sealed games. I think they had like a stack of like Shenmue 2 as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the thing is, as collectors, I think one of the things we kind of worry about is, I mean, you mentioned Pat the NES Punk. I know he has that segment called like Scumbag Seller of the Week.
Yeah.
Best segment. It's the best segment of the podcast.
It is, yeah, it's brilliant. Like, you know, but there's that worry in the retro game collecting community about these demons who get their hands on our games and they're selling them for stupid prices. But, you know, like, I don't think the price they were charging for MSR was that bad, actually. I think it was fairly reasonable. I mean, I did have a look on eBay. It didn't seem too different from what I could see on there.
It's comparable, yeah. And I think the key thing is people will look at it and say, oh, well, you could have bought that for 10 quid for 10 years ago, Seal. It's like, yeah, but you can't do that anymore. I think 25 viewers was reasonable. I mean, it's a hard one to judge with Metropolis Street Racer because it is such a common game. And I think by now everyone's got them. I mean, they made like hundreds of thousands of this game that never got sold. So there's tons of them out there. I will admit, I thought at €25 for a brand new sealed from a non-eBay seller, so you know what you're getting, I was expecting them to sell out pretty quickly. But if their stock levels are correct, that's on their website, it has been live for a week now, and they have sold 16 copies.
16?
16, 1-6 copies in a week.
Wow, they've sold more than Spirit of Speed then in Japan. Well,
I was actually going to say, that's coming up to the official sales figures for MSR, isn't it, Tom? Based on the conversation you and I had the other day.
I think this is a positive thing that they're selling it, of all people, as well. Because I suppose anyone could get their hands on like a pallet and just sell them off, you know, bump up the price. But if we, you know, if you want a copy of MSR and you want a sealed copy, you could buy this and it will probably go towards, you know, funding a new Dreamcast game, I'm sure they'll release in the future. It kind of, it's almost like sort of a going back into the Dreamcast community, you know, supporting the community.
Yeah, good point. And me and Andrew had a bit of a discussion about this the other day on Discord about how if this is what they've got and that they're showing now, what we'd like to see in the future maybe is, you know, who knows if, you know, unsold pallets of actual Dreamcasts might come to the fore as well, which would be amazing. Mm. I'd be down for one of those.
You might find the printers as well, Tom, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
a lot of talk about these where they've bought these games from on some of the different Dreamcast forums and on some of the Italian and French forums. It does seem to be a theory, as it were, that there is a known quantity of sealed Dreamcast units and games in Italy. So I'm guessing the former Halifax distributed. Everyone knows Halifax distribution stickers. We have lots of them over in the UK. So there's sort of a theory that there's quite a lot, and some people have said they know that there is a lot of consoles and games in a warehouse, which I presume is where they're getting these from. I don't know. There's no distribution stickers on anything I can say.
Well, they did comment that the Soul Reaver version they have is fully in Italian. So that checks out. I can also see in some of the boxes behind, there's the Sydney 2000 game as well. I don't know if I presume they're sealed as well. So I think they're
burn them.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure they do have more copies, more games than they've sort of let on at the moment. But it's a significant haul, put it that way. So let's, you know, in the interest of moving on, let's have a look and wait and see. I think the final thing I'd say is, I think the pricing is reasonable, but obviously people aren't buying them. I don't know whether that's because it's MSR and not something else. It'll be really telling. I think of all the games they've listed, the one that will really tell us what the demand is, I think, will be the Marvel versus Capcom copies. I think that's probably going to be a bit more expensive than €25 for sure. But I think if any of them are going to sell out quickly, I think it's fair to say that's the one that would be first to do that. But yeah, it'll be really interesting to see. And as you said, Tom, I think if any hardware comes out of it, well, not all hardware, because I think, you know, you could buy controllers and memory cards cheap as hell a couple of years ago, sealed. But if there's any actual consoles that come out, I think that'll be very interesting, unless they try and charge us 500 quid for them. Moving on then, and talking about games, so there have been there's quite a few new Dreamcast games to talk about, actually, or I use the term new in speech marks. There's a couple of things. So first of all, I wrote an article on a Kickstarter game that I was alluded to by friend of the show, PC Wizard. My Spanish is not great, but Mortadelo y Filemón.
I'm looking forward to this.
There you go. Which apparently is a Spanish comic series, that this is a point and click adventure version of that, which is an old game that was re-released on Steam, I believe, a couple of years ago, which has now found its way on to Kickstarter successfully already at a very modest title. And I'll invite you you, Mike, to pick up this story, because you've done a lot more sort of probing into the developer than we have, and maybe you can tell us a bit more from there.
Yeah, so as you alluded to, it's appeared on Kickstarter with a very, very low target. I think just over €1,000 target. Yep. It's actually the second game that they've kickstarted to release on the Dreamcast. The first one was a game last year, around this time last year, I think it was, Drascula, The Vampire Strikes Back. Similar story, it's an old Spanish point-and-click adventure, very much in the style of the LucasArts games of the late 80s, early 90s, and also on Steam as well. And so they did this Kickstarter. It sort of went under the radar quite significantly. We did talk about it very briefly on the Twitter feed, but it wasn't really mentioned much after that. And I've been keeping an eye on it for the last year. I think around 65 people backed the game. Some of them were at the non-Dreamcast level. So I think around 40 people at most would have backed the game for Dreamcast version. And to be honest with you, in the write-up that I was doing for the game, I was sort of saying, you know, will we ever see it? You know, it's unlikely we'll ever see it. It seems like it's there was no pictures of the actual case. There was no information at all. And then as this latest Kickstarter launched, lo and behold, the physical version of Drascula did turn up in people's hands. And it has been released. It is a official indie release, and people do have it. I've had the pleasure of playing the game. I didn't buy a copy. A friend of the junkyard, Chris Nunn, who's quite local to me, lent me his copy. I'd love to sit here and say it's a great game. The game itself, actually, I actually bought the game. I've played the game on Scum on a PC. It's a pretty good game. The Dreamcast version, however, is not. The Dreamcast version does not work properly. And when I say it doesn't work properly, I mean it glitches, it locks up, it crashes, the audio skips all over the place. It's basically running via the emulator, via the Scum VM emulator. If anyone's not familiar with that, Scum VM obviously is where a lot of the point-and-click adventures are used as a piece of software which then allows you to play them. And Dreamcast versions of those games hit and miss, really, the quality. I've played through Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. I've played through a couple of other games pretty much fully on Dreamcast. But some have lots of audio problems and things like that. And unfortunately, Drascula has this. So it's an official indie release, but using an emulator and with the single least work done on any packaging whatsoever. It's an inkjet printer cover. It's an inkjet printer manual, which is basically half a sheet of A5 folded in half. The disc itself is a blank CDR, which has got a very cheap label on the front with a stamp of the game's name and the game's publishers. And it's as bad as it sounds, really. And just to point out, that did cost people at the minimum €35. I believe the highest back-in level for Dreamcast version of the game was €100. And I think eight people backed it at that level. So that's the quality of the game. It's pretty atrocious. I'm not going to lie. It's worse than we expected, I think. The developer itself, interestingly, so when I did a review of the game, which is live on Dreamcast Junkyard blog, is the developer or the publisher is Urbi Software. Again, my Spanish is awful. Which itself is a well-known name in Spanish gaming from the 90s. They published lots of these point-click adventure games. I suppose the LucasArts of Spain, if you want to call it that. Although the company which published this and did the Kickstarter is called the same thing, it's actually not. From their webpage, they mentioned that they are basically a subsidiary of a larger company which deals with, I think it was, tax concerns of people. So, I mean, at one level, it's just a really poorly put together product, which, you know, we're not immune to on Dreamcast. I think with the quality of indie games in the last 5 years especially, it stands out like a sore thumb, and it's pretty atrocious. But that's one side of it. The other side is sort of slightly dubious. How clear is this licensing for the game? How, you know, why is a company which involved in tax concerns doing Dreamcast publishing? And also just bringing down the entire indie scene to an extent. You know, we've had a fantastic last year of homebrew and indie for Dreamcast. You know, we've had some amazing, you know, all of the ported games, so many indie games announced. I think we're now at 19 games coming within the next 12 months, which is just astonishing. And that's the games that have been announced. There's at least three or four more that, you know, we know are in the works. So for this product to be released as an indie games is pretty poor. I think a few people have commented on the blog and on Twitter saying that they've cancelled their pledges on Kickstarter. Unfortunately, the other side, of course, is that one day I'm sure someone will try and sell these as the rarest Dreamcast game. And like Frog Feast from 15 years ago, you'll start seeing these games go for ridiculous amounts of money. It really isn't worth it. You could literally do it yourself.
Yeah, so Mortadello e Filemon is the new Kickstarter from this outfit that have already basically duped people out of over £100 in some cases.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Kickstarters in general don't always have the best rap. You know, people sort of back Kickstarters with concern. You know, the game might not come out. And in this case, it doesn't even seem like they should have bothered. The stamp on the disc is smudged. Like, yeah. We're dealing with some, like, crap, awful quality here. Like, I understand that people do these Scum VM repros on Etsy, but, like, even then, you're paying less for a better quality product. I mean, I've got like a Sakura Wars Saturn repro with the English translation. It looks lovely. Mm-hmm. Like the discs look mm-hmm. amazing. You know, I got that off Etsy and that costs less than people spent on this.
Yeah, and I think it's...
It doesn't even work properly.
No, that's the big issue, isn't it? I mean, the production values for the actual case and instructions, if you want to call them that, are one side of it. It's the fact that the game itself just doesn't work properly. I understand if you've got a license to something, if they have bought the license rights, which I'm guessing they have, then they want to get these out onto as many platforms as possible. Cool, I understand that, not a problem at all. But even to the point where you load the Scum VM menu up on the game. So obviously, if anyone's again familiar with Scum VM, when it loads up, you get a list usually of what on the disc or whatever you're using can be used. And they've got six versions of the game, and basically each of them different language and text options. Now, the little manual inside, which is, like I said, a half an A5 sheet folded in half, I didn't even know it was there, to be honest with you. And the actual writing on the screen of the Scum VM menu doesn't scroll. So all you can see is Dracula and then a bracket. So you can't actually see what language options they are.
Brilliant.
I mean, it's just...
The most upsetting thing about it all is, as you just said, it's great that people want to port stuff to Dreamcast, and the thing that made me chuckle was when I read or translated the Kickstarter page for both this one and the previous game, they basically said in there that we love, and love was in capital letters, we love Dreamcast, which is why we're porting it. And you'd think if they were doing this as an exercise of love, you know, because they have a certain affinity to the system, they would have taken a bit more effort in actually, you know, even if the game wasn't very good, just at least mm-hmm. making the presentation something that you'd like to have on your shelf. Do you know what I mean?
It's almost like a parody, isn't it? Are you sure they're not like making fun of like the Dreamcast indie scene or something? Like
maybe. Maybe. I guess it's interesting because I suppose over the last 5 or 10 years, we've kind of gotten used to indie games getting better and better and better from a quality, not necessarily gameplay, although that too, but just from a presentation perspective, you know, as materials become easier to source and produce, you know, you've got, basically, I mean, like look at Josh Project. You can't tell the difference in a lot of the games they produce compared to what the originals look like. And we've come so far from what we were like 10 years ago, where every Dreamcast indie game was put into a single jewel case or an empty DVD box. And I think, you know, it's just a shame to take so many steps backwards with something like this. Even if the game was really good, I think having that experience is why a lot of people back modern games, you know, is because they want it to feel like an actual Dreamcast game, not just a game you could play on Steam for 99p. You're actually paying 30, 40 quid because you want the box, you want the manual, you want to be able to put it on your shelf in your collection.
Fair play to Mike, though, as well, for that review, because I chuckled several times reading that. So,
yes.
Fair play.
Ditto. moving on, then, and I think probably of a... certainly a higher quality level as far as indie releases are concerned on Dreamcast. I don't know much about this one, so I'm hoping Tom is going to take the reins here. But the Tex Assist is a game that is coming out on Dreamcast with a limited edition run, which is currently in pre-order, limited to 666 copies. And it looks gorgeous, the pre-order version of it, with the kind of the double CD case made to look like a Japanese release game. The game itself is bullet hell shoot 'em up, which is one of my least favorite genres. So it's not for me. But Tom, do you want to talk a bit about this one?
Yeah, so it's described as a bullet hell game, but it's not really bullet hell. It's kind of like so. Let me go back. So the Texas is this new game from Game Fairy, I believe the outfit is called, and it's primarily being released on the Dreamcast. But I think it might come to like other platforms later on, but. From what I've seen, and I have spoken to the publishers as well to get a little bit more information, this game is cool in that it makes use of the Dreamcast keyboard. So it's a top-down RPG with a traditional kind of sort of sprite-based engine. And the way that it plays is that you play this kind of priest who is wielding this kind of this Bible that's got a life of its own.
So I'm suddenly interested in this, by the way. I've gone from like, this is not for me, to I'm trying to find the pre-order button right now.
It's so cool because it's just like, it's got like a really like interesting story to it as well. And it just looks so unique. And the fact that it's coming to the Dreamcast first is cool in itself. But the fact that it's got this unique control system is just really interesting. And from what I can tell is that you can either play it with a controller, and you can like use like a sort of trigger-driven menu system, or if you are one of the many, many of us who have got a Dreamcast keyboard knocking around in a cupboard or a drawer, or as in my case, about 18 of them in the attic, you can basically plug your keyboard into your Dreamcast, and you can use the arrow keys to move the on-screen protagonist around. And then when you come to these battles, you basically have these typing face-offs. And then basically what you need to do is when the enemy like attacks you, it's like they spray out bullets like a boss would in a bullet hell shoot 'em up. So you have to move with the arrow keys, and then you have to type your spells or whatever it is, or your passages back at the enemy, which then fires back at them. I just think it's a really cool kind of game mechanic that it's just I've never seen before. So
yeah, it does look really good. I just want to correct one thing before we get shouted at by
please do
on Twitter. It's actually was released on the PC and Mac 2 years ago.
Oh, was it? Okay,
it's the first console port. First console port by Head Up Games, just in case people don't think we're giving them the shout out. But it's certainly a game which passed me by. I've had a look on my Steam account, and six people I'm friends with have got the game. Don't know how I missed that.
Oh, Tom missed it, given all his Steam comments earlier on as well. There you go, Tom. So you need to get on Steam and get it.
Well, to be honest, mate, I'm a bit of a newbie when it comes to Steam. Do you know what I mean? I've only recently got a PC that's capable of playing Steam games. So.
The fact that you just referred to it as the Steam makes it mean, you know, makes me feel like... I'm actually suddenly interested in this. But yeah, looking at the limited edition version they are selling for the reasonable price of basically $40, looks really nice. Little, as I said, Japanese game styly with looks very kind of Castlevania artwork type style with an instruction book. I might have to look into this one, actually, as something to buy.
Quite unique that they're doing 666 copies as well, which is...
They got a standard version as well, which doesn't look quite as cool. But it's also for UK listeners, just to let you know as well, the VAT is included in the price. So it actually ends up being about £38 for limited edition to the UK. I know a lot of people are worried at the current time about having to, like, you know, £50 customs charge or something silly on top of stuff. But £38.50, which is a very, very good price, actually.
I am going to pre-order that this evening.
Yeah,
I
had a Dreamcast keyboard arrive today. Never owned one before.
Excellent.
Because I just grabbed a decent deal on Typing of the Dead. So feel like nice. I need to get this and have another game to use the Dreamcast keyboard with. So yeah, nice.
I remember going into a Poundland years ago, and it was just stacks upon stacks of Dreamcast keyboards.
Wow.
Does anybody else remember that?
I think I think Josh probably bought all them up, mate, and I've just been sitting on them.
There's a blog post for cases.
Do I not remember a Dreamcast Junkyard blog post many years ago about that?
Oh,
that
I can't remember. It's
sure it was.
The most days are blended to one, mate, as every year. So
anyone went into Poundland and were like, oh, a keyboard for one quid. One home. It's like, this doesn't go in any ports in my computer.
It's actually the Dreamcast key is actually a really nice mechanic, like old school keyboard. It's like really nice to type on. I don't know if you can hear me tapping away on my plugged in keyboard that is being used for online gaming even to this day.
Are you on Dream Key again?
Yeah, but I'm just trying to find out. I'm waiting for the Texas's pre-order to come up so I can order it now. The final game on my list of noteworthy new Dreamcast games coming out it's not really coming out, I suppose, but those of you who are familiar with the Dreamcast Talk forums will know of Mr. Ian Michael, who has done quite a bit of work from a Dreamcast development perspective. Mm-hmm. And during lockdown, he's just been working on a port of Hexen over to the Dreamcast. As far as I know, it's just a standard port of the original source code, but it is running on real Dreamcast hardware, which I think was the hurdle he was trying to get over. He had it running on an emulator, but getting it working on real hardware was the challenge that he's recently, in the last few days, got over. Haven't spoken to him much about it, but I know his plans are to give it. It currently only is supports the Dreamcast mouse and keyboard, which is cool in its own right. But I know he did mention he was working on full controller support and VMU saves as well for it. So just thought it'd be worth having a quick chat about it. Hexen was a game when I was younger, I always kind of really liked the look of it because it was in the early days of FPSs, and this was one where you went around punching things with a big metal fist. So just interested to see what you guys think of it. Is it something you would fancy playing on Dreamcast when it's ready and give it a whirl, or is this leave it on the PlayStation, please? Thanks.
And the Saturn.
For me, I'm going to leave it. I don't like Hexen. I think it's an awful game. That said, I know Ian Michael, I've chatted to him several times on the Dreamcast Talk forums. He's a lovely guy. He does a lot of stuff for the community. Mm-hmm. So I can't really fault what he's doing, but it's not for me. I don't like Hexen. I think it's crap, but I'm sure this will be a great version.
Yeah, Hexen's one of my favourite games of all time, so cheers, Tom. Hexen's fantastic. Hexen's Hexen on the PC.
You're wrong, Hexen, Mike, but carry on. PC.
I mean, you know, for console peasants of the 90s, obviously, Hexen might have been bad, but for those of us who had PCs, that is a shareware game with a guy at the time. Hexen was one of those games which everyone, I think, on PCs in the 1990s sort of had as the shareware version. The whole Hexen Heretics series is just sort of, I suppose it's a bit of a weird one, that sort of fantasy mix with first-person shooting, but it's a great game. It's a great game. Am I going to buy it?
There's no shotguns, Mike. There's no shotguns.
There's no shotguns.
But, it's awful. You
know, I think Tom likes shotguns too much. slightly worried, but it's one of those games. It's another classic game for some people coming to a Dreamcast. What's bad about that?
The only thing I can think of that is bad about it is, you know, inevitably in 5 years, someone is going to inkjet print a cover for Hexen, stick it in a jewel case, and then put a copy on eBay for 30 quid. That's the only bad thing about it. But
hey, if John Romero wants to do a hand printed copy of that game and does it, I'll happily have a copy from John Romero.
I'm going to play it. I've already offered to do some testing for Ian if he needs it. It's something I definitely want to play. It kind of passed me by back in the day, but it'll be really good to see if it is working with the controller as well, which will be interesting. Lewis, any thoughts from you?
Never played Hexen.
Now's your chance. The only final thing I'll say on with regards to Ian is that Tom, you mentioned he'd done a lot for the community. I know he was actively involved in sort of ripping through the contents of the recently discovered sort of dev kits hard drives that have been posted. And I'm pretty sure it was him, and I could be wrong here, so apologies if I am, but I'm pretty sure he was involved in you know, the Simpsons, sort of extracting the data to get the Simpsons prototype running.
He's involved in all the Atomic Wave stuff and all the game stuff that's going on, so yeah, he's well in there.
It's a really interesting, if you're not a member of Dreamcast Talk forums, it's dreamcast-talk.com. Certainly recommend going over there. There's tons of fascinating conversations going on around this sort of stuff. And yeah, if you are interested in that next level, definitely recommended. That's all on my list. Any other Dreamcast games you guys know of that are in production we haven't mentioned here or likely to come out sometime soon?
Nothing that I can think of that we're allowed to talk about. So a bit of a nudge and a wink, you know, for future episodes.
Yeah, next. All right, so on the topic of tenuously related to new games, I suppose. We at the Junkyard have all, in the last month, seem to have got our hands on a GD. Is it GDMU, GDEMU, or GDEMU? How would you like to say it?
We had this conversation, didn't we? Yeah. I think we were going to call it the ostrich, weren't we?
The ostrich.
Just to sort of cover it, yeah.
It's actually Gdummer.
I actually think this is really funny because the story goes like this. I installed one a couple months ago now. I bought a second Dreamcast. I didn't want to butcher my OG launch console. I bought a second Dreamcast because I'd wanted a GDMU for a while to play a load of racing games for the book that I'm writing. And ultimately, I felt like I was really kind of late to the party with it all. And apparently I wasn't that late because since I've done it, as I said, I think every other person in the Dreamcast Junkyard staff group has done the same thing. For those who don't know what it is, it's basically a very simple modification that you can do to your Dreamcast console. It requires zero soldering skills and very little IQ, to be honest. Exactly. If we can do it, anyone can. It's literally a case of taking the case off your Dreamcast console, undoing about three screws, removing the GD-ROM drive, which is kind of comes out in one unit, and replacing it with basically a small
PCB.
Thank you. That kind of goes into the same slot and effectively, as the name would suggest, emulates the GD-ROM drive. It connects to an SD card, which you can load up with all your favorite games, and effectively it tricks the Dreamcast into thinking it's reading them from a disc. It differs from some of the other kind of solutions in the sense of it's probably the purest form you can get because it is literally emulating the GDI file straight from the card rather than as if the disc is actually in the console, but without any of the load times, which is really nice. So it's super duper easy to do. I was even surprised at how straightforward it was. So I thought it'd be worth talking about it because we've all done it now. Started to see the benefits of it. But the one interesting sort of side effect that's coming out of these sorts of modifications now is that we are starting to see the opportunity for indie developers to be able to sell digital copies of their games rather than the expense that goes into producing all of the physical media. And whilst, as we've just covered in the last section, a lot of people want to be able to play or have these physical games on their shelf, I think it does give you an option to support the indie community, for a cheaper price and also get a copy of the game that you could play digitally on your Dreamcast. So, Lewis, do you want to start us off on this one? Have you done your mod yet? Or is something you're thinking of doing? Or what's your feelings on it all?
Yeah, I'm surprised you don't remember because I made such a fuss about it.
Oh, yes, of course.
I had problems with mine, which is annoying because, like, when it comes to Dreamcast, I always feel like I have such terrible luck. But the issue was around the SD card I was using. And it's annoying because once I switched the SD card, all the problems were gone, like in a jiffy. I was using Integral Ultima Pro micro SD card in the adapter, and it was formatted correctly. I followed all the tutorials on how to, like, you know, sort out your games. Thanks to James, you know, showing me there's a nice tool that will, like, format and put all your games on the SD card for you in sort of like a nicely arranged order. Just saves you a lot of time there. But Tom then said that he had a similar problem, and he recommended I use the same SD card as him. So I'm using now the SanDisk Extreme 32 gig. And I loaded it up and I put it in and I was thinking, oh no, like, this isn't going to work because I'm a negative cretin like that. And worked fine. Not one game crashed, which like it was doing before. All of them worked perfectly. So when you're installing your GDE EMU, all the putting it in is okay. Just make sure that you're using a good SD card. Probably more beneficial is to use something like the one I'm using, like where it's not a micro SD, it's like an older, you know, 32 gig, you know, smaller size or something like that. So me telling you this should hopefully make you not have to go through the frustration I did. So yeah, either way, I got it installed and I was playing Nappletale in English and it was awesome. Loads of stuff like that, which we're going to get onto, you know, loads of translation projects that you can play just dead easy on GDEMU. You can play a Thomas Wave easier than if you were to try and load it up any other way. Yeah, it's a brilliant little thing. I'm still going to collect games because I have sort of like a fondness for that, but yeah, it's a really nice piece of kit, and I'm really glad I got one because I think for ages I was sort of holding off, and then I think you, James, showed how easy it was.
You were like, if this idiot can do it, then I obviously can as well.
Well.
Tom, you've obviously jumped in as well.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat as Lewis, really. I put it off for so long because I, A, was wary of the price of them, mm-hmm. and B, was a bit kind of, not confused, but I already had other things that could do what the GDMU could do. Mm-hmm. So I had the Dreamcast that's got the flash card that can go inside of it, and I've got the SD reader that can go into the serial port. So I thought I was golden. I didn't need to bother with any of this stuff. But then as soon as the Atomic Wave stuff started to hit, and I started having problems with games that wouldn't run either through the compact flash or through the SD card. I was thinking, I need to be able to play these games because it's something that I'm passionate about. And for a lot of people, again, going back to the Dreamcast Talk forum, they were saying that they were having perfect results with the GDMU. So, yeah, it seemed like a bit of a no-brainer to me. And I bought mine from a place called, is it Kaiko or Kaiso or something like that? Mm-hmm. Kaiko.com. And again, like yourself, James, got it, put it in, and it's been an absolute revelation, to be honest. I did look at things like the mode a couple of months back, but I mean, that's hundreds of pounds. And this GDMU, it's not an official one. It's basically a copy version, but it's like 40-odd quid.
Yeah, you can do these. So yeah, you're right. There's tons of them available, even on places like Amazon now. I think I got mine from an Amazon seller. I think mine was about £40 as well. So you're looking at that. You're looking at about £10 for an SD card, and then it's completely optional. But I really recommend either 3D printing your own or just buying someone who sort of 3D prints the inside sort of mount to sort of put your GD EMU on, and it allows you to access the SD card a lot easier. They're about £10-15 as well. But yeah, I got to admit, I feel like I wish I'd done this years ago.
Yeah, likewise,
it's so easy to do. And yeah, I'm the same as you, Lewis. I love to collect, you know, the games that I want to collect. I've got a load of PAL games on my shelf, but there's just some games I'm never going to pay like the money for because I don't want to play them that much. But I am quite intrigued to actually play them in the first place. An example is Sonic Shuffle. I streamed this week. Terrible, terrible game. I would have been devastated if I ended up spending like 50 quid on that or however much it goes for. But I'm glad I was able to experience it and play it without any of that problem.
The beauty is, though, as well, as Lewis alluded to, that you can play all these like fan mods as well. And I've predominantly been using my GDMU for the Atomic Wave ports, which are fantastic. And again, as I said earlier, I've had issues with trying to run them through the CF card or the SD card. On the GDMU, they just run perfectly.
The other advantage, of course, with hardware mods like this is that if you're playing any games which have got notoriously long load times, like Soldier of Fortune, for example, or Sonic Shuffle, it's basically completely eradicated. I mean, you still obviously get a load time, but it's about, you know, it's a fraction of what it would have been if it was loading it from the disc.
It's interesting you mentioned Soldier of Fortune, because I did play that on GDMU and it's still got a long loading time.
Oh, is it really?
So, yeah, so that's really weird. Because it's not as long as it would be on the disc, but it's still long. So it's just like, what is this game doing that is taking so long to load?
I know PC Wizard played through Soldier of Fortune on his hard drive modified Dreamcast, which eradicated a load of his load time. So that's interesting. Mike, I feel like a GDEMU goes against everything you stand for, and I was surprised to hear that you were so into this. What benefits has it brought for you and your ginormous collection? Is it all going on eBay now?
Well, yeah, I'm going back to buy whales tomorrow. So I'm all for the DIY approach to Dreamcasting. I don't think buying expensive secondhand games is for anyone, or indeed most people. So I'm all for it. But I'm very similar to Tom, really. I had a CF card reader from Tom a couple of years ago now, and I've had no problems with it at all. And apart from the last couple of Tom's Wave games, which for some reason didn't work, so. For me, just getting it to sort of experience another format. I'm probably slightly out of sync here with the fact it's not my primary console, my GDEMU console. My CF card reader is still hooked up as my primary one.
So I suppose the beauty of that, though, is that you've still got the GD ROM drive as well, haven't you? So you can still put
exactly. Yeah, it's things like being able to see what being able to look at the DC disk checker and seeing what sort of data on a disk I found quite interesting for some of the indie games. I've loaded up the SD card with loads of games. It's great to have access to those games really quickly. Loading games onto CF card readers is a little bit of a pain sometimes, so it's definitely a preferred option than that for me. And just generally, it's a cool little thing to have. It's so cheap and so easy to install. It just prolongs the life of the console. I think to answer you, judging by our Facebook group and our Twitter feed and our various forms of social media takeover, I think most Dreamcast people now, most Dreamcast players, have a GDEMU or one of the other options.
One final thing I think I'd say, and I don't know if this is an exclusive thing for GDEMU or if the SD solution, the other solutions do the same thing, and maybe you can educate me on this, but I was very pleasantly surprised to find out that whatever games you load onto your GDEMU, you can play it on any region, but also you can force them to run in VGA mode without any. Well, I've not come across any compatibility issues yet, and I know that was really, really pleasing to me, because I use my Dreamcast on attached to a monitor via HDMI and a pound cable, and so being able to play things like Dino Crisis, for example, that is you normally can't do in that setup is really good. So it just takes another barrier away from being able to play Dreamcast games, because you haven't got to worry about whether a game is VGA compatible or not if you're not using a CRT.
There's a very small minority of games that will not run, regardless of what they are.
Oh yeah, what was the one? Was it Hydro Thunder?
So basically, the Dreamcast that I put my GDMU into was the one that Citrus 3000 PSI sent me, which was basically almost the prototype for the DC HDMI from a couple of years ago, with the little port in the back, which actually has the DC HDMI board underneath the Dreamcast motherboard. So I put the GDMU into that. So that's now my main Dreamcast. And there are some games, you download the files from the internet, which say they are the new hot versions of them, which have the VGA compatibility in them. And yet they still will force you. They will battle with you not to be playable. Do you know what I mean? They'll have weird artifacts, and the screen will continue to like squash and expand and squash and expand. It's like the Dreamcast is battling against the game to make it force into VGA. But I think for the vast majority of games, it's fine. But it's just a very small minority. It's the vocal minority of games. Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, let's hope we see more indie devs take advantage of this now, as I think more people kind of convert their consoles. It might be something they've got to consider. And I know, obviously, the whole piracy side, ironically, will become a potential issue there. But I think it would be nice to see more devs give people who don't want a physical version an option to still support them.
There's a way around that as well, James. I think with, I don't know if Tom's are the same thing, but when we were given early access to Xenosider, we had to sort of put a disk check into our Dreamcast, to then get a code, and they only gave access to the games, to the game, for people who had that code. So there's definitely ways they could make it so that sharing the actual ROM didn't allow it to be shared elsewhere.
That was really ingenious, actually, wasn't it? Like when that screen came up, we had to put the code in to make it match your Dreamcast. So yeah, there are ways of doing it, obviously. So
Interesting.
Get a code wheel, bring them back.
In the instruction manual, turn to page 64. What is the fourth character on the third row? Beautiful. All right, moving on then to our final topic of the evening, and we'll make it a quick one. But we've been talking a lot about playing custom versions of games on GDMU. There's been a lot of buzz recently in the community, certainly on the Junkyard Discord, which the modding channel has been used as a bit of an unofficial translation channel recently. But we have seen quite a few games, sort of a few translation projects going on, fan translations of games which didn't appear in English, which I think is fantastic, because it gives people an opportunity to kind of play games that they wouldn't have previously been able to. The one that I covered most extensively was the French exclusive Dreamcast game and the rather atrocious Taxi 2. But it, you know, even regardless of how bad the game was, and I streamed it, if you want to go and have a look back at that, and I also wrote an article on it, it was still great to be able to play this kind of game and understand what was going on, which previously was completely non-accessible to me. There's a few other translation projects in the works. We've got is it Gagaman? Is that Animated AF's handle on Junkyard?
Aaron.
So he's been working on a translation of Boko Dream Master, which looks really good. I mean, he streamed it the other day, the work in progress version. Amazing to see that come together. And there's a ton of stuff which I should have mentioned. It was Derek who did the translation for Taxi 2. Derek Pascarella, is that how you say his name? And he's got a number of other projects ongoing at the moment, which Lewis, you can fill us in on in a second. But it's really great to see all these games getting some attention, and hopefully we'll open them up to a whole new audience. And I think it's just something that's another thing to get excited about, really, as a Dreamcast user. Lewis, do you want to touch on the other things that that Derek is working on?
Yeah, so one actually that he's working through these at like rapid pace. Mm. I must say I admire his passion to get these games, and in the case of stuff like Taxi 2, and I can't remember the exact name, it's a Neon Genesis Evangelion typing tutor. It's been really interesting being part of our community and talking to him. I wrote an article about how he translated up to a, say, like, I think it was level 4. I think he went up to 1 to 4, and then it was 5 and 6 he was having trouble with, because the way that the game works, it starts to incorporate Japanese characters into the typing. He was saying how it's a really difficult thing to break the code and change. And within a week, he'd sorted it. And now the game's fully playable to English speakers with a QWERTY keyboard.
Just to add to that on the speed, sorry to interrupt you, Lewis, but it was a similar thing with Taxi 2, because when I heard he was translating it, I messaged him and said, I'd be really keen to help out, like, with testing this if you want. And he said, yeah, great. I'll send you the latest version for testing, which he did. He sent me the link. And then about 6 hours later, I got another message saying, oh, yeah, we've just released it. We finished everything. So here's the link for the full version. So that was just to give you an idea of how quickly they work.
Yeah, he had a similar thing. And this is where we get onto another project he's working on, Hanagumi Tyson Columns 2, which is a Sakura Wars Columns game. But it isn't just, you know, you're playing puzzles and the the characters are there. You know, there's a lot of these kind of games where they just whack an anime skin over these like puzzle games. You know, I've got a few on the Saturn from like Tenchi Muyo and all these series I like, but this one actually has the Sakura Wars story mode where you're actually like talking with the characters and picking options to speak to them. So it is an interesting game. And when it's in English, I think a lot of people will play this and it'll be maybe some people's first taste of a Sakura Wars game. Yep. Because, you know, this is a series that's failed to be translated into English by Sega themselves. And this is the point, actually, you know, this, the Evangelion game, even Taxi 2, you know, we all kind of hold projects like, for example, Sega Gaga on like this pedestal of like, this is the ultimate goal for translations on the Dreamcast. But I think things like these games I've just mentioned and the one Animated AF is translating, they're just like weird, interesting games and ones that we probably wouldn't bat an eye at because they're just, you know, lost in time because they were only ever released in Japanese. And, you know, like Boko Dream Master, I never heard of this game, but I'm going to play it now. And it actually looks quite ridiculous and probably up my alley. It got a 1 star in the A to Z of Dreamcast games, but I'll still give it a try if it's in English and I can actually understand what's going on.
That's the thing, though. If it's in English, it opens up the games. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about 19 indie games coming this year. You add on the amount of ports that are being done still from the Atomos Wave games, and all these are translation projects as well. We could be approaching 60-70 games this year that are new to people. So, I mean, it's a renaissance of Dreamcast at the current time, an absolute renaissance.
Yeah, the stream that he did of Boko Dream Master the other day was really, really interesting to see. And he's sort of modified some of the text slightly. And I was saying he needs to make it a real kind of fan community project. And I think his next step on that is talking about replacing the speech with voiceovers and, I said you've got to get people like Tom involved, and
I'll be up for that. Definitely.
Yeah, you've got to get Tom and PC Wizard involved, and just adding a bit of community to it, I think, would just be amazing. So, yeah, it's great to see projects like this happen. And I think the question I want to throw to you all on the spot is, if you could have any Dreamcast game, and it can be anything, translated to, because it's something you want to play, is there any suggestions from the group as to what you'd like to see?
Can I just jump in here, actually?
Of course you can.
Any game that isn't Sega Gaga.
Oh, what?
Because we all know that we want that anyway, so just makes the answers more interesting.
I think for me, there's one that I've been intrigued by, which is a game that Rob wrote about a while ago on the blog, which is called Key to E, White Illumination.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I think it's called... Is that the right name?
Yeah, it's like a visual novel.
And it's like it's like a visual novel about somebody who falls in love with somebody who's like from a different town or something. I just thought it sounded really kind of whimsical and romantic. I just thought that'd be quite cool to play. But another one that I'd like, again, as Lewis alluded to there, was Sakura Wars. I know about this series. I've never had any interaction with it other than seeing it on the shelf of an import shop or at a convention. And I would never buy it because I just know I can never play it and experience it. Mm. But if somebody could translate that for me, like at the click of a finger.
The interesting thing about Sakura Wars is it's been translated into English on the Saturn. And honestly, if we could, like, I don't know how we would do it, but if we could like rally the community to sort of prod those translators and say, hey guys, why don't you collaborate with some people who like, you know, hack Dreamcast games, you know, like Derek does, just use that script and then we can play the Dreamcast version as well. Like, that'd be super cool, like if something like that could happen. And then obviously if we could see 2 and 3 and 4, which still elude many of us who can't speak Japanese.
I just wanted to say a massive thanks to Derek, really, for the work he's doing, just to give him some recognition. Amazing work.
Yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it? It's going above and beyond again in how you do it, which is kind of what we said earlier on about having the labor of love back to the community, I suppose. Yeah. My choice is, I've got a bit of a boring choice, which is the obvious kind of Mobile Suit Gundam Federation versus Zeon and DX, to give it its full title.
It rolls off the tongue, doesn't it?
And I just kind of want to see that translated, because you know, we play it online quite a bit now, and it would just be nice to be able to not rely on muscle memory to get through the like 5 or 10 menus before you actually get into an online game. So that would be nice. But my real kind of out there option is, I would love to see July translated.
Oh yeah.
Purely because it's obviously iconic as a Dreamcast launch title in Japan, which is the only Dreamcast launch title really that you wouldn't be able to kind of pick up and experience that kind of day one Dreamcast experience from. So yeah, that would be a mammoth undertaking. And I've already prodded Derek about it and said, you got to do July, but I think that's going to be a huge one to look at. A
couple of series I want to sort of bring up. The Eldorado Gate series is an obvious one, and the Missing Parts series is a fantastic sort of crime-based visual novel series. I think those two would be really cool games to bring to the Dreamcast for English speakers. There's so many games out there from someone who's played a lot of them with Google Translate. I mean, some of them are somewhat difficult to understand, and I think translations would be fantastic for a lot of them.
One I remember Mike actually mentioning in a previous episode, the Lost in Japan episode, I brought up Desperia. You know, I remember Mike saying it's a game where you can use a guide and, you know, Google Translate, but it sort of loses a little bit of the experience. And then the other one I would want is Comic Party, which is a visual novel that it's a little bit more than just reading text. It's got a weird gameplay mechanic around organizing the schedule of like a guy who's like an amateur comic artist. And that to me just really interests me, especially because it came out in a time when I was into like manga and stuff like that. I probably understand a lot of the references. However, I understand that to others, a lot of those references are probably incredibly niche. So that one is probably never going to be translated into English, but one can dream.
We don't ask for a lot, do we, on the Dreamcast Junkyard?
No. Yeah, translate Sakura Wars 1, 2, 3, 4, Columns 1, and also the one about the stage play and the tabletop games. That's all we're asking.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah.
We want it all for nothing. And we want it tomorrow. Thanks. That'd be really good. Gents, we've been talking for a long time about Dreamcast, so I think it's time to say goodbye for this evening. We've got lots more news on some projects coming soon. We've got 3 new books coming from the Dreamcast Junkyard, various authors coming out hopefully in 2021, which we'll be doing a more in-depth deep dive of at some point, I'm sure. But for now, I think that'll be everything for us to chat about. Lewis, where can we find you on social media and the likes?
You can find me on the Junkyard Twitter, which you will plug in a second. But my personal Twitter is LewisJFC. If you just look that up, you'll find me.
Tom, have you got a PO box these days or anything else that you want to plug?
Yeah, my PO box is Tom123XYZ. Just put that on your envelope, send it to me, and I'll receive it. But you can also find me on the Dreamcast Junkyard Discord. Throw your abuse at me as much as you like. I love it, frankly. So, yeah, that's me.
Tom's actually like Santa Claus, where if you just write a letter and address it to Santa Claus at the North Pole, it will get to him. If you just write a letter addressed to Daddy Dreamcast UK, the post community in the UK will find its way to deliver it.
Yeah, then I'll come down your chimney and like climb all around your bedroom walls like a spider.
It's got weird. Don't get to your Pinocchio references again. Mr. Phelan?
So, yes, you can find me on Twitter at @space_turnip and myself and Tom at the Power Drifting podcast, which is also on Twitter and many other forms of social media.
Beautiful, shameless plug there. You can find me on Twitter at @AgileHarvey. You can find the Dreamcast Junkyard on Twitter at @TheDCJunkyard. As the boys have alluded to, we have a very thriving Discord community now, which we encourage you to join. You'll find the link posted on Twitter somewhere. And we also have a Twitch channel now, which we're doing regular streams on. So come and follow us on there, twitch.tv/DreamcastJunkyard. That's it from us today. I've been Jazz. They've been Lewis, Tom, and Mike. And we will see you all next time.
Please stop this disc now.
I'll try and talk before my internet cuts out, because apparently I'm on dial-up tonight, which is an interesting experience.
Are you in the Dreamcast again? I told you about this.
I'm on a Dream Ice connected C-Man microphone. Yes, old school.